Well, I'm very excited to be here to give an overview of where we are nationally on the state level and to talk a little bit about the progress over the past 70 years and to enjoy this celebration of our anniversary, 70 years, with community water fluoridation. I'm not sure we can top the opening session, but we should enjoy this session and take pride in the work of a lot of people in this room, as well as others who came before us. First, I have no relationships to disclose as far as conflicts, and the findings and conclusions are those of the author and don't necessarily represent the official position of CDC. So in this session, we are celebrating 70 years of progress in the use of community water fluoridation as an effective community-based preventive measure. Since its beginning in 1945 in Grand Rapids, we have witnessed its adoption by communities across the U.S. and in many countries around the world. CDC in 2001 recognized community water fluoridation as one of 10 great public health achievements of the 20th century. Water fluoridation remains the cornerstone of our public health efforts to prevent tooth decay. It remains critically important in our efforts to improve the nation's oral health, even in the current environment of widespread availability of fluoride products, such as toothpaste, mouth rinse, and topical fluoride treatments. Let's reflect a little bit about fluoridation when it started. Back in the 40s, extractions of permanent first molars in young children were routine. Typical school child developed 3 to 4 new cavities each year. Full extractions and complete dentures were the norm for older adults and for a lot of adults. Recruits were rejected for World War II service a high percent because of poor oral health. And sometimes dowries for new brides included a set of dentures. So I don't know if the younger members of our audience have a picture that things were that sad not that long ago. So we have come a long way. The early trials were in 1945 to 47 and went on for some of them for 15 years. The first to start was Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the four trials, field studies, had a control city. In Michigan, it was Muskegon. In New York, it was Newburgh and Kingston. Here in the Chicago area, it was Evanston and Oak Park. And in Ontario, Brantford and Sarnia, with a additional city to compare to Stratford, which was naturally fluoridated. Looking at trends on the national level, this graph shows the in the light blue, the growth of the U.S. population, totaling all these. The dark blue is the population served by community water systems, and then this lower area is the population on community water systems receiving fluoridated water. So we see over the last 12 years there's been a steady increase and an increasing percent of the population on public water systems receiving fluoridated water. Another look at this going back to 1992. In the red is the percent on public water systems receiving fluoridated water, whereas the dark blue is the percent of the U.S. population. And again, we see a trend over the last decade that shows we are continuing to make progress in bringing this to more members of our nation. What about progress on the state level? Well, CDC works with states to monitor their progress, looking towards meeting the Healthy People 2020 objective, which is for 79.6 of the population to receive on public water systems to receive fluoride. This is state data from 2012, and we have a gradient less than 50% on up to 90 to 100%. And there has been progress over the last decade, particularly in states such as California and Utah, several others. But for the most part, in the Midwest, Upper Midwest, and the Southeast seem to have made the most progress over time, much of it longstanding. I don't know if you go to the National Oral Health Conference, but the awards for fluoridation, there's a number of cities that are receiving their 50-year awards, which is great to see. Just a brief review on caries prevalence in adolescents, data from NHANES, looking in the light blue is the prevalence of dental caries, and the dark blue is the mean DMFT, which is decayed, missing, and filled teeth. So we see a continued marked improvement over the last few decades. And not all of that may be due to water fluoridation, but we feel a substantial portion of it is. So a lot of success to be proud of. Turning to our new PHS recommendation for water fluoridation, let me talk a little bit about the policy background for fluoridation. First of all, there's no federal requirement to fluoridate. States and communities determine whether they're going to fluoridate, with these decisions often made by elected officials or by a public vote. CDC has stepped up their monitoring of the benefits and risks of community water fluoridation. We've added some questions about exposure to sources of fluoride, testing of home water samples, as well as measures of both decay and fluorosis, which should give us data in the future to support analyses of how we're doing. So the new recommendation was looking back at the existing recommendation from 1962, which set an optimal level of 0.7 to 1.2 milligrams per liter, also referred to as parts per million. And that depended on the average annual air temperature, because studies at the time indicated that children in warmer climates drank more water than in cooler climates. An HHS panel of federal scientists was formulated to review the evidence to update the 1962 recommendations. And in 2011, they proposed that HHS go to one uniform level of 0.7 milligrams per liter for the whole U.S. So the intent of this was to try to balance the benefits of preventing tooth decay across the lifespan while reducing fluoride exposure in children and reducing the milder forms of dental fluorosis. So what's happened since 2011? The federal panel included representatives from a number of federal agencies, CDC, NIH, Food and Drug Administration, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Health, Environmental Protection Agency, and the Department of Agriculture. Public comments were received on the proposed change, approximately 19,000 of them, and those were reviewed, summarized, and considered by the panel. Once they determined what they would like to make a final decision on and the justification for it, that was sent out for independent peer review of that draft recommendation before it was finalized. So the uniform recommendation was decided to stay at 0.7. This was announced April 27th, 2015 at the National Oral Health Conference in Kansas City. How many people were there by chance? Quite a few? Good. Those recommendations, the Public Health Service recommendation for fluoride concentration in drinking water for the prevention of dental caries, was published both in the Federal Register and in Public Health Reports. Also in that issue of Public Health Reports, there was a Surgeon General's perspective from our Surgeon General Murphy. So despite all this progress, we still have a substantial burden of dental caries. It is a highly prevalent chronic condition. Here's a few statistics about how it continues to be an issue and why we continue to need water fluoridation as well as other preventive efforts. Water fluoridation reduces tooth decay about 25% in persons of all ages. That's what the panel concluded was still a valid statement. And that in large communities, a dollar spent saves $43 in dental treatment costs. And that's in 2014 dollars, adjusted for inflation. What are the risks of water fluoridation? Fluoride ingestion from any source while teeth are developing can result in what's called dental fluorosis, which are visually detectable changes in the tooth enamel, often only identifiable by a trained dental professional. But they range from barely visible lacy white markings, as shown here, to more severe types where there can be pitting of teeth. Now that happens when there's very high natural fluoride in someone's water supply. The Community Preventive Services Task Force found no evidence that community water fluoridation at the concentrations we use results in severe dental fluorosis. So what were the reasons for this proposed change? The evidence supports continued effectiveness of water fluoridation and cost effectiveness, but drinking water is now one of several sources of ingested fluoride, other sources being toothpaste supplements, commercial foods and beverages. There had been a noted increase in the prevalence of the very mild to mild forms of dental fluorosis. And the panel concluded that caries prevention can be maintained while reducing this risk by going to the 0.7 level. They also concluded that outdoor temperature is no longer an important predictor of children's water intake due to the changes in our society and culture, such as air conditioning and those types of things. The Community Preventive Task Force in 2013 found strong evidence that community water fluoridation was effective, with a median decrease in prevalence of 14.6%, and they continue to recommend water fluoridation for communities. The systematic review for adults found that tooth decay was reduced overall by 27% in their meta-analysis. Two reviews by the task force found water fluoridation to be cost savings, and there's also been a couple studies of Medicaid costs showing they have cost savings. Our chart of water of dental fluorosis from 99 to 2004 shows that there was a higher level in the 12 to 15 year olds, and we're hoping that over time this can come down with the adjustment to the fluoride level. This is a chart of the decayed surfaces versus the prevalence of fluorosis, and 0.7 seemed to be a good level to maintain prevention and limit the extent of dental fluorosis. As far as safety, the EPA is the one who sets the standards for safe drinking water. The current level is 4 milligrams per liter. They are working with a review done by the National Research Council in 2006, and they looked at 2 to 4 milligrams per liter. and found only evidence of an increased risk of severe dental fluorosis above 2 milligrams per liter. So nothing below that, such as the levels we use. I won't go into all the concerns addressed by the panel, but there are some things that will need to be addressed by states. Some of them may need to adjust their state regulations. And there is a place where you can track that at the fluid.law website. And I think I will end my presentation there. Thank you.